howdy, folks.
Oh, no. Please do not make me interact with the performers. You know how much I hate the...
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 364 for the week of July 19th, 2021. I am Uncrossable Bridge, David T. Cole, off to a great start. I'm here with Gentleman's Punch Bowl, Sarah D. Bunting.
Sorry, Pete.
Town Rule Enforcer, Tara Ariano.
No!
And book number, Sean Pfluger.
I'm here to advance the plot.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us for the very first time, it is an opera singer and musical theater enthusiast, which is why he's here. It's Sean Pfluger.
Sean.
Yay.
We're here to talk about Schmigadoon, in which Melissa, played by Cecily Strong, and Josh, played by Keegan-Michael Key, are New York City doctors who've been dating for around 3 years. He thinks everything's fine, but she yearns for something more, so she signs them up for a couple's camping and hiking retreat. First strike for Melissa, in my opinion, but we'll get into that.
At least one strike.
Before long, they get lost. When they see a bridge, they figure it leads to a town, and they are right, but it's a weird town called Schmigadoon, population 167, where everyone is dressed like they work on Main Street USA at Disney World. Two hotel rooms cost a dollar, and townsfolk are constantly breaking into song. When they try to leave, they discover they can't, because you can only cross the bridge out of town with your true love, and maybe Josh and Melissa are not that for each other. The first two episodes dropped on Apple TV Plus on Friday. We have seen screeners for the whole season, but we'll try to be vague about future episodes, which drop one a week on Fridays from now on. Let us do the Chen check-in. Sean, should our listeners watch Schmigadoon?
Yes.
Nah.
Dave?
I'm gonna do a qualified no. Qualified in the same way that I probably couldn't get my mother to watch The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Yes.
I agree with Dave. If you are a big, big musical theater fan, no, if not.
If you're Sarah.
I'm a big musical theater fan too, and it was not for me either. So let's get into it. Sean, we thought you would be a good guest for this episode since you did so well on a recent all musicals episode of The Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show. Was this one on your radar before we asked you to come on? And if so, were you excited about it?
Yes, it was definitely on my radar. It was already on my calendar when it was coming out. And I wanted to love it. I should have loved it. I merely liked it.
Mm-hmm. It should have made you love it. It just made you like it.
I really wanted to like this more than I did. I thought that some of the numbers didn't rise above an SNL level of parody. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this could have been written in a week. They do a 76 trombones and a Do-Re-Mi parody. And if you've heard a kabillion of them, like I have, they have to be really good. Otherwise, it's just like, eh.
Yeah, that was my feeling too. I'm vastly in the minority of the critical consensus for this one. My issue is that the songs are well-executed riffs on the Golden Age musicals that they are referencing, but there needed to be... Like, they needed to take another step. It just seemed like they were being too reverent, and then they weren't taking it further to, like, make more of them, to make the songs themselves funny as opposed to just referential.
You ready for a Dave T. Cole lowbrow comparison?
Yes.
What they needed to do was Zucker Abrams Zucker it up some more with, like, airplane style, taking a reference and doing something genuinely skewed with it, rather than just the future scary movie-esque, here's a reference from a movie you've seen before.
Yeah.
Look, somebody's doing bullet time from The Matrix.
Yeah, exactly.
But not actually doing anything else except, look, it's The Matrix.
Right.
A bit of that happening here.
It's the Big Bang Theory of jokes where you just reference it and it's not a joke.
Yes.
Like, and what I love, like, I love the co-op episode of Documentary Now. Mm-hmm. I've watched it over and over again.
Everyone does.
The DVD of the actual documentary that's coming out with commentary by the people who did the musical as well as Documentary Now.
God.
So it's like, I'm so fully into that.
Yeah.
But it's like, When they were more straightforward and like they leaned into like sentimentality, I thought it worked a lot better than when they were trying to be funny. I just didn't think it was that funny.
Yeah. Sarah, was there anything the show could have done to hook you, or was this pretty much your feeling as well?
Yes, it could have done things to hook me. My issue actually wasn't that it was too musically, weirdly. I think the co-op reference is a really good one, because one of the things that I revere about that episode is that once it has proven its bona fides to you in terms of its deep felt understanding and knowledge and fondness for the genre, then it doesn't have to show its work on every single fucking song. Mm. And this is one of the issues that I was having with Schmigadoon, is that it just kept being like, you know, look how completely we did this. Like, look how steampunk this is. Look at this child is actually rolling a hoop, which, like, this is one of my go-to jokes for old-timey things, and I felt yep. very seen. And also Keegan-Michael Key just being like, that, like, they start a song and he's like, why? Mm-hmm. Like his little throwaways. I mean, there is a lot to like here, but it doesn't have that confidence that co-op had, that the people watching who understand, like, whatever, all the Sondheim references. And like, P.S., this is rife with like my birthday mates, Keegan-Michael Key, stupid Sondheim. Yay. Maybe Bob Costas will show up. Maybe Shatner will sing a number. I don't think so. This is, again, it's likable, but like, I stopped after a handful of episodes and I'm just not motivated to go back to it, because I feel like it's reproving the same bona fides about itself over and over again, which is something that co-op and sort of in a larger sense Documentary Now didn't feel the need mm-hmm. to do. And it just was very wearing. And there was also, on the part of certain performers, a manic feeling like, oh no, now I have to sing Cecily Strong. Like, she's fine, she's good, but it just didn't, I don't know, like, once that Lorne Michaels like production company card came up at the beginning, I was like, mm-hmm. I don't have a great feeling. Like, I didn't have a bad feeling, but it just, you know, one of the things that co-op did well was believe that it was doing it well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this, I think, still doesn't. I don't know.
I didn't think of that reference while I was watching this, but definitely top of mind was Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which, like,
yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I feel like this is, you know, they're trying to do different things, but Crazy Ex-Girlfriend was also like playing with, you know, all of the musical genres pretty much, and like doing something interesting with each of those songs on its face, like outside of the story. Whereas this, it just seemed like we're mimicking the style of Rodgers and Hammerstein or whoever, and then leaving mm-hmm. it to the outsider characters to like comment on it comedically. Right. And I just felt like it was that joke over and over and over again.
And then Dave is totally right that that sort of airplane style of humor, like the mm-hmm. fact that the running gag about Pete, like anything that happens that flies out of frame and it's like, ow, like wherever they are in Schmigadoon. And then at the auction, he shows up and he has like random scrapes on yeah. his face. Like this is the feeling that you needed to go for, because that's yes. what you're actually good at in terms yes. of the comedy. And like, again, yeah, I liked it. I wasn't mad about watching it. I didn't think anyone was terrible. But once I felt I could stop, I was like, okay, I've diagnosed why I don't love this, and now I'm going to move on.
What I thought it was going to present as, or maybe just in my mind, what I was kind of hoping for. So one part of it is just doing more with when they riff on, you know, a 40s musical, and then we've established mm-hmm. that. Yes. But the other thought I had was that it was going to kind of be a reverse Pleasantville, where it presents as mm-hmm. horror, kind of. Mm-hmm. Like, not horror, but you know what I mean? Like, it presents as this terrible situation.
Or Truman Show, totally.
But, like, with true dread, mm-hmm. right? Because Keegan-Michael Key is, like, has that reaction to it in theory, but it doesn't present itself that way. Like, at first, he's just sort of, like, bored with it in the sense that I would be bored watching one of these musicals that it is based off. Like, I get that. In that sense, I am the meta Keegan-Michael Key watching this show, him in this Schmigadoon town. But the sense that they're trapped in this place they cannot escape from, like that panic, that dread should have weaved itself into the story and the songs and the way those characters perceive citizens of Schmigadoon. I thought that would have been better. And then they could, from that initial reaction, go down the ramp towards something that they present in episode one and two, which is sort of normalized sort of reactions to everything. It just seemed like there wasn't enough real person reaction to what is like a fucking nightmare. Even if you like, even if you're one of the characters and you like 40s musicals, let's not forget, you were trapped in this weird pocket universe. Yeah. And I thought that would have gone a long way to sort of flavoring this, because I feel like there is a tiny taste of that madness, but just a little bit. And I feel like if they amped it up, it would have been better.
Yeah, agree. They needed to lean into the sci-fi aspect of it much more, actually, now that I think about it.
Yep.
So there are a lot of things that actually did well. It shot the performers well, especially the dance scenes. You could see the dancing really clearly. Yep. It was, and the dancing was great. I feel like it was cast really well. Like they cast Broadway performers who I love, who some of whom I've seen in person. I like the singing good. You know, like if singing was bad, I would be annoyed. You know, like with all those live live musicals they've been doing on television, I'd drive me nuts when they're just casting the wrong singers. And I think that there'd be like two musical songs that I liked and then one I wouldn't each episode. It's like, so I'd be like, oh, I don't like this one, but oh, I like that one, which is why, you know, I was pretty up and down on it. Sarah, you should watch episode 5 because Jane Krakowski has a song that is awesome. It's a cross between, I'm Always True to You, Darling in My Fashion, and To Keep Love Alive. And she's doing choreography while driving, quote unquote. It's great. That was probably my favorite number. Because I was like, do I really want to keep watching? Oh, yep. I keep want to keep on watching because Jane Krakowski's serving it. I also loved Alan Cumming when singing with the random Italian accent. I had to explain that to my husband because I was like, oh, it's a South Pacific reference. And like, and like I know all the references. So it's like, I was like, oh, that's cute. And then like when something like Jane Krakowski killing it, I'm like, oh, this is awesome. This is what I wanted.
Yeah, when it's clear the actors are having fun, I do think that takes you a long way. And it does seem like everyone is enjoying themselves, which is nice for them. But I agree, the singing was great. Also, since you brought her up, like, shouts to Jane Krakowski's agent, since she's like one of the first credited actors. She's only in 2 episodes.
I kept on waiting for her.
Yeah. Yeah, she comes in as a kind of Baroness from Sound of Music figure.
Okay, so I have just a couple like non-musical observations. You can't in this day and age use, I'm going to forget the name of the font. I'm going to look it up. But you can't use a Law and Order font on your TV show.
Yeah, thank you.
That was weird.
Like it's the jersey in the rafters now.
Yes.
No, yeah. You can't do it. I think it's Quadrata?
Whatever it is, every single ophthalmologist between here and New Jersey is using it, speaking of jerseys.
It's in the credits, but they also have it sort of as a chapter.
Yeah, the chyrons.
Yeah, and that makes it, like, if they just moved it down to the bottom, it would be Law and Order. So, no, you can't do that, guys. Sorry.
Chung Chung.
Yeah.
Speaking of eye doctors, in the doctor's office, it's there's an eye chart and it says Lopez is extremely handsome. If you look in the back.
Nice.
I stopped and paused it because I was like, did it say that? Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
That is awesome.
It's true. That's Jaime Camille, and he is. And he was very funny too. Sean, does this concept have legs for a second or multiple seasons, in your opinion?
I would want them to move it to something different. Like, I liked it enough that I've watched every episode twice.
Wow.
You know, because I could pick out all the references. I was like, oh, that's the Julie Stein number. That's the Rodgers and Hammerstein. That's Lerner and Lowe. It's like, I like picking out those things, but it's like, you know, I was still disappointed too, because I was like, oh, good song, bad song, good song.
Yeah.
I would like to see a season 2 and see what they could do with it though.
It is time to go around the dial. We're going to talk to Tara first. Hello, Tara.
Hi. Two shows, both kind of middlebrow. First, American Horror Stories, not to be confused with the main show, American Horror Story. This
sounds like you're getting more for your money.
You kind of are. This is a Tales from the Crypt style anthology series. It is on Hulu. It's FX on Hulu, whatever. I don't know why they do that, but it's not on FX. It's on Hulu. The first two episodes, which were essentially a film-length story in two parts, dropped last Thursday, and I don't know if it's one or two after this. But anyway, we return to Murder House as new owners move in. They are married house flippers, Michael, Matt Bomer. I think they, I heard someone call him Michael Winslow at some point, which is like, if that's a joke, it's very sly. And then Troy, Gavin Creel, another Broadway star, who are planning to turn it into a spooky B&B, and they are moving in with their daughter, Scarlett, whose name is played by Sierra McCormick. I'd never seen her before. Scarlett pretty quickly finds the old gimp suit hanging in a closet. Instead of burning it, decides to put it on. And when she looks in the mirror, she sees the rubber man from that season looking back and gets freaked out. So she throws the suit in the trash, but this is a horror story, so it gets back in the house somehow. Mm-hmm. It's also established that she's into watching extremely violent porn. So when the suit comes back, she puts it on again to prank her dad, she says, although when she does put it on, her eyes go all black. And so it's, you know, question mark. She ends up slashing Troy in the arm. Tension kind of ratchets up from there. Other stars include Maren Dungey as a therapist. Paris Jackson is one of Scarlett's classmates. Aaron Tveit, who is also in Schmigadoon, and Kaya Gerber, Cindy Crawford's daughter, are in it as well. Not until the second episode, so I won't say more. And obviously, the American Horror Story singular audience is pre-sold for this. But if you have sampled that show and bailed on it and you like horror, you might like this more, because the problem with the main show for me usually is that it has a lot of grabby ideas early on and then it loses the story thread about halfway through. Also, the seasons are too long. But here, neither of those is a problem because the idea only has to sustain itself for one or two episodes. And I'm also interested to see if they get more interesting new actors to the Murphyverse as it goes on, since it's less of a commitment to anyone to just do one as opposed to a whole season of the main show. And I will also say, even though the main show always has moments of black comedy, this was also much funnier to me. But that might just be because it was compressed into less time. Give it a shot. It was pretty good. I went into it with like zero expectations because I'm very up and down on American Horror Story. But it was fun. Sean, you were nodding. Did you watch it, or you're nodding because you're going to try it?
I quit three seasons in the middle because I was like, this is really good. I like this. Yep. I like this. I stopped.
And yep,
I was like, okay, maybe I'll try it then.
Yeah. I don't think you'll be let down. And I also watched season two of Never Have I Ever, coming of age Indian American girl story on Netflix. We pick off where we left off with Davey in a love triangle with Ben, her like frenemy who kind of tortures her, and they have a flirty, bantering relationship, and Paxton, the hot, unattainable guy who is clearly 28. So she kind of resolves it by deciding in the first episode she's just going to secretly date both of them and not tell each other. And that kind of doesn't go great, as you can expect. Part of the reason is that her mother has decided at the end of season one that they're going to move back to India. And so she figures, like, even if it blows up in my face, I'll be gone. So who cares? But spoiler, you know, doesn't really go the way she expects. We also get a new character, Anissa, who's like the only other Indian girl at school. She's like better Davey. She's like Allison from that episode of The Simpsons. She's like better Lisa. But she has her own problems, and Davey unwittingly makes those worse too. Nalini, her mother, still probably my favorite character because I'm also old. She gets more of a story this season too, with like she gets her own kind of bantery frenemy colleague, another dermatologist who's like the number one dermatologist in Sherman Oaks, played by Common.
Who's
and he's
terrible.
Really funny.
They're, amazing.
he has like his own skincare line, and she's very dismissive of that, but also clearly jealous. Like when she goes to yell at him in his office about something or other, and then like collects all of the samples that are on the table. And Sarah, Tyler Alvarez from American Vandal, is also in this season, playing an actor who's like just recently his Disney show that he was a kid on about a kid who drives around in a magic limo with his dad. has just ended, so he's like totally full of himself, playing an actor, playing an actor, always good.
Mm-hmm.
I know the show got some heat, which I'm not qualified to address, about its portrayal of, you know, Indian American life and some stereotypes, but to me, since I can't speak to that, I thought season two was just as good as season one. It was really charming and funny and sweet. Sean, you're nodding again. Did you watch this?
Yes, I'm not all the way through it, but I really love the second season also. I like how the kids are really kids and they make kid decisions. If they're not like making grown-up decisions, they're decisions that you know a kid would make.
Yes.
There's one scene where a boy, he's like, I'm going to flirt by stealing girls' hats. Like, that's the best.
Yeah, it's good. And you know, a core of all of season one was like the reason that John McEnroe is the narrator is because Davy has problems with anger. And that is still definitely true and definitely a part of her personality. So I like that they didn't try and soften her. She's still recognizably a teen. For my plug, sit tight, because I will be talking about it when Sarah gets to her Around the Dial pick show.
Sean, what do you got?
Okay, so I'm going to talk about two shows that are almost done or are done. Love, Victor is on Hulu. It, you know, was originally made, the first season was made for Disney Plus, but they decided to push it off onto Hulu for its first season. So they knew that they could go to a more adult storylines in the second season, and they really done that very well. It was dumped all at once. So, like, you know, it's a show that you talk about for a week and then everybody goes through it and then it's over. So if you haven't watched it, I think you should check it out. I just love the details. And again, these are kids making kid decisions, and but they're on the more adult side. So there's like Victor's has to figure out how to use a condom, and they have a shot of lube somewhere. And it's like, oh, that's going to do what? And there's real pitfalls to high school gay relationships. People tend to be equally right and wrong. And Anna Ortiz has a really great arc on this season. She was on Ugly Betty. She played the mother of Justin, and who is the obviously gay child that she just supported the whole way through. And in this, she's the Catholic Latina mother who is having a hard time accepting her son. And there was a lot of criticism of the movie Love, Simon. It's like, oh, look how everybody accepts this so easily. And with Love, Victor, there's definitely been a lot more struggle and a lot more grit to the storytelling. So I really recommend that. And I'm also going to recommend High School Musical, the musical of the series.
Best title.
Yes, the best title. The first season that came out last year, they were doing High School Musical, the musical. This season, they're doing Beauty and the Beast. And you may know Olivia Rodrigo. She's really hit prominence now with Driver's License and being a vaccine advocate. And Joshua Bassett, who is the young man who also has some songs on the radio. And like, they seem like they're in conversation, but you know, it's a weird thing. But this season, the plot centers around the Mankies. So I know in Washington, D.C. area, they have the Cappies, which is like the high school theater awards. And so the Mankies are these fictional awards. And the machinations of the kids and the teachers is really funny as they go for these high school theater awards. They're, you know, the show isn't as grounded as a as like a Love, Victor, because like they have, you know, straight talking to the camera, confessional type things. But they also do nice things to keep it grounded. Like the teacher asked Olivia Rodrigo's character to write a song to go in the musical. And I was like, no, you do not do that. You don't add a song to Beauty and the Beast and then expect to get an award. And and then, you know, like the next episode, they're like, oh, you can't do that. That's illegal. That's violating copyright. I was like, oh, thank you. Like that kept it grounded for me, which that made me happy. So it's a pretty light show. Singing's pretty good. The acting's pretty good. And it's not quite as gritty as Love, Victor. So I recommend it.
I feel like that was actually like a Disney note. Would you mind please putting this in so we can deal with less of these? Like in the episode after that, they try to make a cake and they're putting Disney characters on the cake. And then they go, oh, no, we can't do that either.
And for your plug.
Oh, for my plug. So I'm a musician. I sing opera with the Washington Opera. We've been dark for a whole year. And this is the longest I've not done a show in like 15 to 17 years.
Oh, man.
So if you can buy tickets to your local theater, because local theater performers haven't been working, that'd be great. You can also go to my website, which is seanfluger.com, and look at some things I've written, because I've actually written a few operas, and I write choral music and arrangements and strings and stuff. So if you want to check it out, I have a show that is based on my favorite episode of Frasier.
Excellent.
Wow. Amazing.
Fantastic. We'll link that in the show notes.
All right. Sarah, what do you got?
Well, there's no easy segue into Dr. Death, so Dr. Death. Go like check out Sean's website.
Do you like cautionary tales about things you shouldn't do as a professional?
Yeah. Do you like thinking about every twinge in your back and freaking out? So Dr. Death, it's too long by about two episodes, but given how skeptical I was that this project had any legs at all beyond the casting news updates, which is kind of where I am emotionally with The Staircase, mm-hmm. that it's like they keep announcing these Oscar winners and I'm like, are you playing the stairs? Like,
yeah.
Are you playing the actual staircase?
I watched the original documentary series, I'm like, there were not that many people.
Like, no. Like, playing The Staircase in Germany. Like, whatever. Mads Mikkelsen. What like the that, fuck, guys?
Bob Dylan movie. They just get, like, somebody new every couple minutes.
Totally. And there's some casting overlap with that, too. Anyway, I was quite pleasantly surprised by Dr. Death. I mean, pleasantly surprised is not quite the right term, but I thought it was good, particularly the acting. Joshua Jackson, especially as Christopher Dunge, does not have an easy job of it, but he is excellent. Just the right amount, I think, of opacity for a person whose motivations in the end we really are not ever going to understand because we don't have narcissistic disorders. Is the series of fear-mongering chyrons at the end capped by what happened here will happen again?
Yeah.
Over a dully glaring Jackson in his weight gain makeup. Is that necessary? Not really. Do we maybe get the extended medical exposition scenes with Alec Baldwin and Christian Slater mostly because they had unexpectedly awesome buddy movie chemistry? Probably. I don't give a shit because Slater in particular is really charming here. A much needed ray of weird in this story. Like, the character actually says hee-hee several times. His announcement, like, Alec Baldwin's character shows up at the door and he's like, come on in, it's opera night. And Mr. Hilaria just makes this blandly despairing face in response. It's poetry.
Yeah.
And that's a big reason to stick with this one, I think. More than one reviewer has pointed to the multiple surgery scenes as malpractice porn, and I can't really disagree with that. There's a lot of clinking and squelching, and it's a lot, but I think they're also successful narratively in terms of creating tension in this story. And but you can just take my word for that and fast forward them. You don't have to put yourself through it more than once or even once. Like, you get it. The surgery went wrong. Several reviewers also pointed to the frustration they felt at the series not trying harder to, quote, get at Dunge and his motives. And I don't think that's a bad take, so to say, but I do also believe that there are many serial crime cases, and this is one of them, where because sociopaths are what they are, it's pointless to try to pin their bad acts on a single Freudian moment where Dad yelled at them in a flashback. Mm-hmm. And I was actually glad Dr. Death didn't try too hard to strain for that analysis. And on the few occasions where we were supposed to kind of tie like a failure at football to what happened in the present day, that didn't work as well for me. And it felt a little bit obligatory. So
I did like the one scene where he's putting together a crib and just like freeballing it, like not following the instructions, not using the right tools, mm-hmm. not using the right screws. I was like, I get it. I see what you're doing, but I still appreciated it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did think that was good. And then just his girlfriend being like, but that these are the only screws. And he's just like throwing them across the room, like having just built an IKEA bookcase like 2 hours before I sat down to watch this. That was giving me super anxiety. So yeah, furniture assembly horror also is in this. I talked about these things and many other aspects in the true crime newsletter that I write with Eve Beatty, Best Evidence. That write-up, like most of our content, is free, and you can find it datelined Monday the 19th. We'll link it in the show notes. bestevidence.fyi. You can also hit the discussion thread that we had on the series. That will also be in the show notes. And I believe Tara has a related plug.
I do. I interviewed Joshua Jackson about this project at Vanity Fair, and I really, like, he got himself there first, but since I know he's a Canadian living in the U.S., I really teed him up to be like, just go off on our shitty health insurance. And he was like, okay. And he did, which was delightful. So you can see that at Vanity Fair, and we'll link it in the show.
And that is also linked at Best Evidence, so.
Right here on Extra Hot Great. Next week, it is Netflix Sexy Beasts with returning guest Will Ellis.
It's going to be bananas.
And then coming up on Friday on Extra, Extra Hot Great, it's the Home Goods Shopping Network, in which we furnish a room of our choice with TV things, but only one item per show. So we can't just do the madman thing, as Sarah told
us. Which I would be tempted to do, but yeah, it's like a fantasy furniture draft from TV shows.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's this Friday, so check it out.
Today's extra credit topic is called cable access. It comes from Dawn on behalf of the EHG Assist team, who we're going to be hearing from much more in a couple of weeks. Stay tuned for that. Don writes, give any TV character or group of characters a late-night local cable access TV show a la Wayne's World. Who's hosting? What's it about? Any fun guests, etc.? I will go first. I figured for a cable access show, it has to be someone who loves mess, chaos, and unexpected visitors. Some friendly, some not. So I'm going with Rigby the Raccoon from Regular Show. He was on my mind. We've recently been rewatching that, as well as CSI. Rigby's interests include slacking off on work and playing video games. So that's what the show would be about. Playing games, getting frustrated when he loses, screaming defensively at the studio audience and his band leader, his best friend Mordecai, not to laugh at him. The show would, of course, shoot in the bedroom that he shares with Mordecai, where he would welcome guests onto the trampoline he uses as a bed. Guests would include Death, a bunch of baby ducks, the god of basketball, Mordecai and Rigby from the future, and maybe some of the characters from Close Enough, since they feel like they're in the same universe because it's from the same creator. Sean.
I want Thomas Barrow, the valet from Downton Abbey, to have a spinoff show of some sort. I really would like him to be a detective, but if he has, he would also be a great late night host, and his co-host needs to be O'Brien, the maid from the first few seasons. And I would love to see their banter, them back and forth talking about their little schemes, the little things. And they could have on all the help from other local abbeys and, you know, great houses to talk about the shit that's going along and over there. So I think that'd be a great show.
The toaster episode.
Toaster episode. Yeah, well, it'd be sponsored by toasters.
Sponsored by toast. Toast is cooked bread.
Amazing.
Sarah.
I was very tempted to have Boyle from Brooklyn Nine-Nine have a late night show called Pie Holes, where he just reviewed pizza, but I was afraid that that would cross over with someone else on the panel. So I went with, and I got bogged down naming this thing, so you guys are going to have to help us on social media. Let me know. Obviously, John Munch is hosting a public access show in which he challenges historians, journalists, and government officials to disprove various and sundry crackpot conspiracy theories. Guests will include Oliver Stone, whatever Dingleberry anti-vaxxer celeb is in the news that week, Michael Cohen, that Seth what's-his-name weirdo on Twitter with his 143 screen Twitter threads, The Restless Ghost of Jim Garrison, et cetera, et cetera. Now, is this joint going to be called Chemtrail Mix? The Paul McCartney Doppelgang? Or Munch the Press? I don't think so. I've decided the Mount Weather Report is probably the best bet, but I welcome your suggestions.
Nice.
Dave.
For me, and we're going to talk about this more in a second, but for me, the best part of Loki was the alternate universe dumping ground, The Void. So my show is hosted by the, I think, the 70s comics version of Loki, played by Richard E. Grant in the show. Yes. He's got the biggest horns. And it's a show with two parts. The first part is basically a roundup of all the weird shit that's been dropping into the void since the last show. Because that was sort of like the great thing about that concept of the void. It was sort of like a literal and figurative dumping ground for all the weird little Easter eggs that would never get into the MCU proper because they were just too ridiculous. Like there's what they call the Thanos Chopper from the comics, which is like this bright yellow helicopter that apparently Thanos flew in the comics that says Thanos on the side, like a 1970s toy.
Sure.
Frog, Thor, that kind of stuff that is in the comics here and there, but you're never going to get proper storylines in the MCU. So it's good for that. And then the second part of it is basically he's going to interview one of the alternate Lokis that gets dumped into the void. And we saw like at least a dozen of them in the actual show. So, you know, like the first week he may do an interview with Gator Loki and then Politician Loki the next week and that kind of stuff. So
Gator Loki would have a lot to say.
Yeah. Honestly, I think like with just a couple tweaks, this could be a Disney Plus shorts run like their Forky ones where it's just like 2 minutes and that's it. Just get Richard E. Grant in for like 2 days, film 10 of them, boom, you're done. And that will hold those little SOBs for a little bit longer.
Like it.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
Hey, guys. You know, web series? The Office had a bunch. There was one about the accountants, one where Aaron and Kelly were a band. They were a thing in the late aughts when it became cheap and easy to stream videos online, and they were used to drive fandom to the parent property and generally market a TV show. I'm not a crackpot, but the Marvel shows on Disney Plus are today's version of web series. Now, I realize people, including me, had issues with the Marvel shows on Netflix, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and especially Iron Fist and Daredevil. At 13 episodes a season, they always went on too long with a bunch of episodes in the saggy middle where nothing really happened. But at least each of those seasons was trying to tell a story that was intended to wrap up in a satisfying way at the end of the season. Obviously, viewers might differ on the matter of how satisfying they personally felt those seasons were. But you know what no one said about the Netflix Marvel shows? I'd sure just spent a whole lot of hours of my only life on Earth on something that was apparently always just driving me to go buy a ticket to the next Marvel movie. The Netflix shows hardly even crossed over with each other most of the time, other than the Defenders. They attracted name-brand talent to create stories grounded in real-world issues and situations in a New York that was actually playing itself. I definitely had problems with each of them while I was watching them, but when I was finished watching them, I never felt like a mark, which is where WandaVision and Loki left me. In both those cases, didn't watch Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I felt they started out with interesting ideas in a cool, great-looking setting, only for the comic book mythology to drag everything that made the start of the season compelling up its own ass with the purpose of driving everyone who watched it to a Marvel movie coming out TBD. Is it that hard to market Marvel movies that Disney needs to go to the effort of creating whole TV series to do it? Don't they have a massive built-in audience? Is anyone who wasn't going to go to the next Marvel movie going to have their mind changed by Loki? Why is all this effort being devoted to selling me? When we talked about WandaVision, one of the things we liked at the start of the season was that the show seemed weird, and we agreed that since Disney did have this pre-sold audience, it should be using its resources to hire people who would create concepts that stretched the boundaries of what comic book programming could be. WandaVision did do that for a while before it just had to be bent to serve the larger MCU in totally expected ways, and that was a bummer. Same thing with Loki. The questions about identity and free will and benevolent dictatorship all ended in a fizzle as the villain of the next Doctor Strange movie showed up to talk to us from behind a desk for like 20 minutes of the finale. Loki has a second season planned. But where we left things was not on a cliffhanger that served the story of the show. It just felt like it stopped dead so that a movie could happen next. If you're an adult who likes these shows, I'm happy for you because there's only going to be more of them. But when I read the Loki finale exit survey at The Ringer, which we'll link in the show notes, our past guest Alison Herman was the sole voice of reason on that, by the way. All I could think was that fandom is a prison. This is not only true of the MCU, obviously, but when you have a property that spins off a lot of product, there's a segment of the audience, not all of it, but some, that derives some part of their identity from being fans. At its worst, this leads to racist Star Wars fans who don't understand any of the values that underpin the story, harassing non-white franchise stars off social media. But in its milder forms, you get some of these responses to the Loki finale from Ringer staff, quote, "Loki is the greatest Marvel series ever, and it may be the best entry in the entire MCU." Quote, "It's the MCU climax I've always unironically wanted, a stimulating conversation delivered by ridiculously talented actors." You sound crazy! There's also the matter of IGN firing its, by the way, a recapper named Sinant Adlaka, who won awards for his recaps of Watchmen for IGN. He got fired because he liked the fourth episode less than the first three, and he got replaced with someone who was more effusive. Surely motivated by fear of backlash and yikes. And I should say, IGN is, I looked, they have not made a statement about this, like confirming, yes, that is why he got fired. But he liked the fourth episode less than the first three. And for episode five and six, he was gone. So just saying. And I realize there is no more flaming Moe's, you just lost yourself a customer futility than me shaking my fist at fucking Disney and saying, I will not watch any more of these web series. But I won't. You fooled me twice. I will trust that I will understand what's going on in these movies for children without checking in between them on whatever plot unfolds on TV. And if I don't, that's on the movie, not me. If I hear the Disney Plus shows have started to work more like the Netflix shows while keeping their current much shorter season length, which I approve of, I might give another one a shot. But evidently, whatever they are currently doing is serving their glorious purpose and will continue to do so whether I watch or not. But I have better things to do than submit to Disney's advertainment. I am not a crackpot.
Wow, you sounded like an early 2000s comic up on stage there. You've been right at home in that CSI episode where they kill Jeff Ross.
Yes, with all the rapists in it. Mm-hmm.
I don't disagree with the general sentiment that Loki fizzled out at the end, just like all the ones that came before it, and it became an ad for the next thing. It was, in essence, serving the same purpose as the after-credit scenes usually do when you watch the movies. Like, oh, and now here's the villain dancing or whatever. He's going to be the next big bad. But I think here's the difference between when me and you watch it versus I think when a lot of people that grew up with it watched it is, are you watching a show or are you watching the world's longest movie?
Right.
As a one unit, like you would read the entirety of the current going-ons in Marvel if you're reading the comics and they're all sort of like intertwined and this character leaves comic A and does a little stint of comics B and fights it and that has this minor ripple back in the home comic and that kind of stuff. Like,
right.
That's obviously what they're doing, but they are doing it at the detriment of saying, you can watch this show and have it have a start and a middle and an ending that seems like an ending for that show rather than a, you know, dot, dot, dot at the end of it. Because that was frustrating. Like, I kind of anticipated that they were going to bring in whoever was behind the events of Loki and that that was going to be the villain of the next movie. I mean, that was on the road sign in episode one.
Yeah.
But the fact that they just sat down and had this big, long conversation. And then, like, Loki's now in, you know, yet another alternate universe. And everything's crazy now. And, uh-oh, like, things are bad. And it really just was, like, the coyote putting up the fake painting against the wall, hoping the Roadrunner would walk through it.
Yes.
Like, that's the way I felt. I'm like, I'd like the ride enough. Like, I like a lot of things Loki did. I like the way it looked. I love the Void stuff. I loved all the weird shit that they did with Richard E. Grant.
Yeah.
Like, there was a lot of, and I loved Sylvie as a character. Like, she was good. She was, and then all that funneled down into this one moment where I was just like, oh, they're not actually going to end this. And it's not, they're not going to end it. They're doing a season two. It's, they're not going to end it. They're doing a movie next with this storyline.
Yes.
Like, like the only series from the Netflix shows I think is worth watching is Jessica Jones.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
And it had a start in the middle and a satisfying end. And it was about, and I like that a lot. And I wish they could have done more of that with this and not make me feel like I got cheated out of an ending and make me feel stupid for watching so much of it beforehand.
It just felt like a Christmas story when he's super excited to get to join the whatever Little Orphan Annie radio club and he gets the little key thing and he fills it out and he's like, drink more Ovaltine. Like it just is like, I mean, and everyone learned an important lesson about branding. Like guys, we all know what the brand is. Like, I just didn't like that it just stopped. Like it didn't even slam into anything. It just stopped.
Yeah.
And was completely unrepentant about thinking that we were suckers, which I guess we should know better, but now we do. Bye.
I really enjoyed Loki.
Get out.
Like, I'm sorry.
Just kidding.
Like, because it had the same design as Legion. Legion was great on FX, but like the story just kind of petered out. I end up not being interested. Yeah. But I really like the design. I really like the characters. It felt very Doctor Who-ish. And I was like, you know, whatever next is next. And then the final episode, the monologue by the villain, I was like, okay, here's the villain. I did not know he was going to appear in the next movie until I read about it in other things. But I was like, this is kind of okay. This could have been shorter. And then the ending where you saw that the statues had changed. And I was like, oh, this is totally upset the status quo. This is where the show's going next. I think what happens with season two, how it starts, and how tied it is to the Doctor Strange movie is going to affect my thoughts later. Right. Because if I have to watch Doctor Strange to understand what happens in Loki season two, I'll be mad.
You'll be mad then.
If I don't have to watch it, and if I start with season two, and I'm like, yep, this is a continuation of the story, they stop there, I will be fine.
Right.
But also, they need to have a good plan to get these out on a good regular basis. They can't stretch it out for a year and a half because I know they're not filming till 2022. And I'm like, if it takes forever to get to season two, it's like, you're going to lose me. I want these shows to come out on a regular basis so that I can continue watching and remember what happened.
I mean, to Dave's point, like if I'm supposed to think of this as just like part of the comic book universe where all of it, speaks to each other and no single part is supposed to stand on its own, that's fine. That just means it's not for me, and I will.
Yeah, it's just one book. The Shiliad pass.
Right. All right. Well, thanks for indulging that, guys.
It is time for the extra hot great canon. Submitting a show this week for consideration. It's Sean. Take it away, Sean.
Hey guys, I'm going to need you to forget about the overused memes, the people gushing about the show online, the Emmy sweep during its final season. Let's take a look at a funny, heartfelt show that your friends told you to watch on Pop that you didn't actually watch till it was on Netflix. My submission is Schitt's Creek, Season 4, Episode 6, Open Mic. Yes, I did a rewatch early in quarantine. It is a gently biting, loving show that is ultimately about deeply well-drawn characters who, over the course of 6 seasons, progress emotionally from self-centered, unhappy, and wealthy to to not wealthy, to fulfilled and caring people. The plots tend to be about minor conflicts, sometimes between the townies and the roses, and sometimes between the roses themselves. One key thing is that the townies recognize when the roses are acting out. The town is full of characters who are aware of the world. They use the internet. They have cell phones. They aren't from small town land. I have to mute cringe comedy if it goes on too long, and this sits in a good sweet spot for me. There's a lot of visual humor to the show. I love the costuming. My 10-year-old niece does silent impressions of Alexis and David by flipping her hands or pulling out her eyebrows. I love the physicality. It makes the individual lines better. And it's as heartwarming as a show tends to be. It's almost every time something sentimental happens, there's a joke to deflate it. First is the lightest plot. Roland is having a baby and Moira finds out what the gender is. I love pretty much everything Catherine O'Hara does on the show, as does the world. Clip one.
Who put a picture of a ghost on my desk?
Oh, I can't believe you opened that!
It was on my desk.
That's the sonogram of our baby. I've been trying not to look at it. We don't want to know what we're having.
Roland, you couldn't possibly discern... Oh, no. Here, it tells you at the bottom.
Don't say a word.
That's not fair. Roland, why should I be the only one encumbered with this emotional cargo? Oh, Ronnie, might you and I confabulate for a moment in the back room?
No, Moira, I'm not falling for that one.
Confabulate. Love Moira. Also, I kind of hate Chris Elliott, so the fact that he's very little used on the show is always a plus for me. So Moira wants to relieve herself of the secret. No one's having it. Next, we have Alexis launching a plan to reinvigorate the motel. Clip two.
So, Stevie, one other angle that I'm playing is focusing just on you. You're the hook. Pretty country girl who doesn't care about big city things like dressing well or how she looks. We could rename the motel, like, Stevie's Place.
Stevie's Place sounds like a shelter for battered men.
Through Stevie's increasing awkwardness, we realize that the problem is responsibility and commitment. After her aunt's death, suddenly she isn't a slacker who works at a rundown motel. She's the owner of the motel and is uncertain about her future. Clip three.
Okay. Stevie, I know this is a little overwhelming, but if you want to grow the business, you got to play the game.
Maybe I don't want to play the game. Maybe I don't want to grow the business.
Okay, Stevie, as SVP and CEO of in-house publicity, growing the business is generally considered to be a good thing.
Right, but the more we grow the business, the more money we make, and the more money we make, the more likely you are to take off, and then I will be left here, stuck with way more responsibility than I ever asked for.
What would make you think I would walk away from this business?
Aside from the fact that your wife talks about leaving every day?
So Eugene Levy really sells their connection in this scene. Johnny and Stevie have become close, working together. Like all the Roses, Johnny Rose was trying to get out of Schitt's Creek as fast as possible, and he ends up deeply rooted there. Feels like a father talking to a daughter. Stevie has been alone for most of the show, and seems like a damaged person too. She needs someone to help her and believe in her. Third, Patrick proposes an open mic night to drum up business for Rose Apothecary. David is as horrified as one should be. Can Patrick sing? We don't know. Will it be awful? Clip four.
So then you will be playing your acoustic guitar in front of people, then, in public.
And singing a song.
David and Patrick have a really easy rapport. Patrick finds David's idiosyncrasies endearing and gently makes fun of him all the time. He also pushes David outside of his comfort zone. David is jaded and guarded due to his past, and Patrick is the romantic one who continually has to support David. It's a gay relationship that is explored while not being about trauma, unlike most gay relationships on television. They are a couple that has actual chemistry. They aren't Cam and Mitch from Modern Family, who seem to have no intimacy at all. They regularly kiss and show affection for one another. Unlike other historical gays on TV, Matt from Melrose, Jack from Dawson's Creek. At the climax of this episode is the open mic. Initially in agony, David stands and watches Patrick perform. David, normally in black and white, is dressed in an orange flame shirt that symbolizes his love for Patrick. The camera stays on Dan Levy's face as he melts while being serenaded. Clip five.
Oh, dear. You're awfully brave allowing your beau to indulge himself like this.
Okay, this was not my idea. All right, I would like to dedicate this song to a very special someone in my life. David Rose.
Okay.
There he is. Right there, that's him. Can't miss him.
You'll let me know if I should pull the fire alarm?
Yes.
I call you when I need you, my heart's on fire. You come to me wild and wired. You come to me and give me everything I need. Give me a lifetime of promises and a world of dreams. Speak the language of love like you know what it means. And it can't be wrong. Take my heart and make it strong, babe. 'Cause you're simply the best. Better than all the rest. Better than anyone. Anyone I've ever met. And I'm stuck on your heart. I hang on every word you say. Tear us apart. Baby, I'd rather be dead. In your heart, I see the start of every night and every day.
Moira? Oh, you two, I told you I don't know.
But we do. We called the doctor.
You did, lovely.
Well, don't you want to know what it is? I'll give you three guesses.
Moira, we're having a boy.
A boy? I believe I told you that. How wonderful. My boy right now is being serenaded by his butter-voiced beau.
This episode and this show have one of the best representations of a gay relationship on television. I love the chemistry. I love the specificity of these actors. Clip 6.
In 10.
Okay.
9.
Okay, just take 8, the buns 10. Off.
See, Stevie? We're both up there now.
Why isn't it just Rose Motel? The Rosebud makes it a sad, stunted thing.
Okay, it's just that Bud is Stevie's last name.
Oh. Well, that's nice then.
Yeah, except it's Bud with two D's. But
okay, well, that would just look insane. Sorry, I didn't know that.
Can we have breakfast now?
Yeah, let's celebrate. Come on.
Oh, not to brag, but this rebrand got me 77% on my final marketing exam.
Okay, have you ever gotten an A?
So the Schitt's Creek Motel is rebranded to the Rosebud Motel. A butt joke. Another deflation. That's why this is my submission for the canon.
Thank you, Sean. Sarah, why don't you start?
I found so much to relate to in David's horror of being serenaded and just like his nauseated responses to mentions of beat poetry, been there. Also, his just like the horror when his boyfriend busts out the guitar and then sings at you. I just thought that was very relatable. But then I also thought that the way that they pulled it back was exactly that right balance of like, it was very funny, but it was also very sweet and touching. And even I would have been sort of won over by such a serenade once. There's really a lot of examples in here. I'm not a regular watcher of the show, and it's sort of like gone on and off the list over the years. But I also like, I really like the balance between the sentimentality and the humor that you mentioned, and the way it can tell when it's about to sort of go too far into learning and hugging, as they would have said in the Seinfeld writer's room, and they're able to pull it back. They also don't go too far into cartoonishness like in earlier episodes. I think that the point that you made, Sean, about they're not in small town land. Like these are people with lives in the internet, and they understand that the roses are dicks. Like I've always thought that that balance is really good. I don't have as much grounding in this show to say whether this is like peak Schitt's Creek, but I feel like the reason that everybody tells you, you know, the general you, to watch this show is embodied by this, that there's like good jokes, not too much Chris Elliott, amazing costumes on Moira. I laughed, I sniffled, it was better than Cats. And the presentation was excellent. I would also mention that the photo shoot that they're trying to do behind the rebranding, and also her like evolving retitling of herself,
yes, I love that.
Where, like, by the end, she's like, Grand Poobah and head of the Stonecutters. And you're like, oh, girl, whatever. But the photographer is so good. It's like, okay, Johnny, what are we doing with our hands? Like, that. I just replayed that moment because the delivery of that line was so good. It was a very enjoyable 21 minutes and a very enjoyable presentation. Tara.
Yes, thank you, Sean. This I do think the Moira plot in this episode is the weakest, and not only because of Chris Elliott, it just sort of felt like this felt like an afterthought when the other two were so much stronger. Mm-hmm. Although I did, it was cute when Moira kept calling Patrick David's beau, which was always my Canadian grandma's word for a boyfriend as well.
That so, was my that was Philadelphia sweet. Grandma's word for it as well.
So the Stevie Johnny Alexis plot, God, you're so right about the physical comedy. Annie Murphy is so funny, and her like trying to like coach Stevie on how to pose was one of my favorite moments. I did also LOL at the Stevie's Place Sounds Like a Shelter for Battered Men that you clipped. I thought was very good.
And true.
Yes. I also noted that this episode was directed by Kids in the Hall alumnus Bruce McCullough, so that might be where a little bit of the grit comes from. Yeah, I do. And I agree that Johnny being the most normal of the roses, that it's very sweet how his relationship with Stevie has evolved. Like, I watched all of season one. We had a previous canon presentation about the wine, the fruit wine.
That was mine.
Right.
Sorry, Sean. I do think this show, you can definitely tell how it's evolved since then. Like, it's the characters know each other better. The actors know their characters better. The writers know what they're doing more. Like, it just seems less. It seems like they've settled down. Primacy. Is the best way I can. Yes. So the Alexis plotline was probably my favorite, which I know is heresy because I know also from Living a Culture, even though I don't watch the show, that this was the song was a big moment. And I agree with Sarah that all of David's trepidation about it was like I felt seen by that as well. Even just his horror at the idea of the open mic even before he thinks Patrick is going to perform at it. Like, Patrick just describes it and Dave just says, oh God.
I would feel horror even if I was not part of the equation. Yes. If I was just in the room, I'd probably have to like leave that kind of thing.
Well, here's the thing, Dave. I felt a little horror watching myself. I know it's a sweet moment.
Like, happy birthday in a restaurant? Even that, I'm like, oh no,
I just listened to it while knitting and then I was like, maybe it's safe to look up now. Let's see what Daniel Levy is doing. Oh, that's cute.
I hate this style of singing, this like the new like whisper girl where every word sounds like you're pronouncing it while pouting. Where,
a
you
sad
know.
Testicle.
Yeah. Like, I get, but I understand that this was a big moment for the show in its run. So with that, I will throw it to Dave.
All right. My problem with Schitt's Creek is that, you know, you watch this episode, it's just like setting itself up for the next Schitt's Creek movie. And I'm like, just have a definitive ending. Don't feed me all this shit with a greater Schitt's Creek universe. I really, really love the ultrasound described as who put this ghost on my desk.
Picture of a ghost.
Yeah. That was, for me, the funniest joke in this episode.
And the pronunciation by this character of everything, like, mucho Diaz, mes ami. Like, why are you like this? It's fabulous.
I love they're not afraid to go stupid.
I agree. This episode, I liked it more than the last episode that was submitted. I felt more cohesive and I felt like they were bouncing off each other more freely. A lot of the times when we have a Canadian show, I get into my Canadian show rant. I'll try to make it short and this one, which is to say, like, this show, even though it became a sort of international hit, is like really, really Canadian format show. And I was trying to figure out like the best way to like describe it besides, you know, sort of like contained and small. Like, Letterkenny and this show are kind of the same thing, except the tone and the style of joke is different. Like, the setting, the characters and everything. Canadian TV shares a lot of that. But also, the ambitions of Canadian TV are different. And the way I describe it is, BBC can give you a show like this, but it can also give you the thick of it. Canadian TV gives you this show over and over again. There's not as much risk-taking. They don't roll the dice that much in Canada. And it has a lot to do with the way everything's funded in Canada and the way that you get money to make a show is to pitch a show like this. Mm. End of rant. I'm not a Schitt's Creek fan. It's not the kind of comedy that I like. I still find Moira annoying as a character, like annoying, like I don't like to watch her. I like Catherine O'Hara a lot. National Treasure. But I don't like her here. I get the feeling that like the big moment is the serenade here. And, you know, because I'm made of steel and stone and I have a black heart, that really didn't do it for me either. But I do see how the show has improved and how the cast really gels. And there is a certain point where you can tell where everything just clicks for everybody that's making a show. And you can see that that has happened between this one and the last one. So I do appreciate that, even though this episode contained, I could take it or leave it. I wasn't mad. I watched it. I laughed a few times, but I wouldn't put it in my canon list. So let's put this to the vote. Sarah D. Bunting.
Are we 87% behind you? Let's find out. I'm going to vote yes on this.
All right, Tara, what do you think?
I really debated on this, but I've been put over by Sean's case, so I'm going to vote yes as well.
Look at that. All right. It's 2-1, so that means... Schitt's Creek, Season 4, Episode 6, Open Mic. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
I forgot one thing. As I really enjoyed the hallmark of a great Schitt's Creek episode is judicious use of Chris Elliott, which makes sense to me. I'm on board that train.
Yeah.
But I like that everybody had the same note. Mm-hmm. All right. It is time for winner and a loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
So Love Island UK is currently airing, and apparently the new trend this season is that instead of flip-flops or heels or whatever by the pool, people are wearing Crocs. And because of that, Crocs has gotten a 1,000% sales boost thanks to their use on the show. I mostly picked this so that we could get comment from Dave, a Socks and Crocs wearer, by the way.
okay,
Dave, your thoughts.
Yeah, all right. I do enjoy a Croc because it is very gushy. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, you can wear it for a long time. You can walk a good walking around your neighborhood distance without getting sore feet, which you can't do, say, like in a Converse sneaker or something like that.
Right.
I do wear socks with my Crocs because I am just walking usually from my house. Here's the places I visit when I walk in my Crocs. My house. Usually a dry creek bed.
Oh, right, yeah.
The coffee hut near my house.
Local coffee shop.
Not even a shop. It's just like one of those huts in the middle of a parking lot you drive through. The Goodwill, where I look for cheap board games to use on the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show.
And socks.
So I have no problem wearing socks. I look ridiculous, I know, but I do not need to impress anybody on this walk, nor do I care what people think of me. Tara is embarrassed on my behalf.
No, I don't care. I should just clarify for people that are getting a mental picture of it. He wears the no-see socks, so you can't really even tell that you're wearing socks unless you see her from behind.
That's almost worse. Have the courage of your convictions and wear some lobster print knee-highs like my husband does with Reef brand slippers.
I think the hidden ones are better. I think that's a better choice, Dave.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm with you.
The problem is I would wear them without
no
socks.
No show socks. You are not.
It's not that I feel like I have to have socks as like a Linus blanket for my feet. It's that Crocs actually will hurt the side of your feet after a while, like because they have that like classic Crocs. They have that little joint for the flap, turns it into flip-flop, into like more sturdy
sling
wear.
Back.
Yeah. That little nub will eventually rub and hurt your feet. So I have to wear socks if I'm going for a long time. Anyways, this has been Sock Talk. Extra Sock Talk. Great.
I regret nothing bringing it up.
And the other thing is that if you're going to buy Crocs and you're going to be wearing them out in the public, may I suggest you go to the Crocs store or place or Zappos that has a lot. Because they have ones that have like sneaker trim around the bottom rather than just all one color. And it makes it look a little more shoey.
It's true. Mm.
That is Dave T. Cole, Crocs tip. Now, to you, Sarah D. Bunting, loser of the week. I hope it's not me.
No, it isn't. You know who's not going to be buying any Crocs new? She's going to have to go on eBay. Erica Jane, because she's being sued for $25 million by one of her husband's scam victims.
Whoopsies.
No no-show socks for you.
Speaking about no-shows, you know what time it is. Game time.
Oh, Jesus.
Welcome back, everybody, to Game Time, sponsored by Crocs with Socks. This is the third game time of the current season. Our scores are Tara 1, Sarah 1, value guests looking to get on the board today. Today, we are playing another pair of jazz hands from original jazz hands author John Connors and jazz hands game fan Adam Grossworth.
Ah.
He liked playing the original one so much, he submitted a follow-up. We had an original author follow-up. I have combined those two into today's sequel Jazz Hands game.
Sequelizer?
Yes. See what they did there? They both get an extra credit topic for their choice. Nice. In today's game, I will play you an audio snippet of a TV star singing a song from a musical. Name the actor for 2 points. If you get the actor wrong or have no clue, I will give you the show they starred in, one of the shows they starred in, after which the actor answer is worth 1 point.
So it sounds like you can guess and still proceed.
Sure can.
All right.
Thank you.
Everything's coming up, Sarah. Regardless of whether you get that right or wrong, I will do a follow-up and ask you what musical the song is from for 1 point. So 3 points possible per question, but we'll deal with the actor first, and then we're done with that. We'll move on to the musical. So, Sean, if you don't win, whoo, you're in trouble.
Take down your website.
Deal meal situation, please start.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah D. Bunting has 6. I have 9. Valued guest has 1. Sean, you know how this works, but if you want to use your steel meal, jump in real quick, because Dave likes to keep it moving.
Okay. We have 27 clips for you today. We got a Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone near the middle of everything for Tara or Sarah to catch up a little bit. And we'll throw it to Picky to see who will be going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. We will start with Sean and then go to Sarah and Tara. 27 questions for you today. Are we ready to play another pair of jazz hands?
Yes. Sir.
Yes.
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 All right. This was labeled the hardest question in the game. So we're going to give it to Sean first to see just how much trouble you guys are in.
Okay.
Please hold your answers until the clip has played. These clips are between 20 and 30 seconds.
There is little I won't do. Is the same thing true of you? I am needing so much more. Every pleasure is a bore. I am something other than a common man. I'm not a common man.
Now, of course, this is an audio podcast, so you can't see the puzzled face of Mr. Sean Fluger. So we may have stumped him, but Sean, who do you think this is? It's a TV actor or an actor who's been on TV at any rate, right?
I really don't have a clue.
All right. This actor starred in Doctor Who.
David Tennant?
David Tennant is incorrect. The answer we're looking for is Matt Smith.
Really?
Wow. Matt Smith. Hmm.
Now,
all right.
You still have a chance for 1 point, Sean, if you can name that musical.
Okay. Matt Smith. Is it American Psycho?
It is.
Nice.
1 point for Sean for American Psycho, the musical. Sarah D. Bunting. Sarah D. Bunting.
Bunting.
Why don't you stay for the night? Or maybe a bite. I can show you my favorite obsession.
I've been making a man with long hair and a tan. It's good for relieving my tension. I'm just a sweet transvestite.
right, you get a free crack at the actor.
I really don't know who it is, but I was getting Steve Martin vibes at the beginning, so let's say Steve Martin.
Incorrect. This actor starred in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, Anthony Stewart Head?
Yes, and the musical is?
Is that Rocky Horror?
It is. 2 points for Sarah, pulling into the lead.
Good job.
Whew.
Yeah.
How do you document real life when real life's getting more like fiction each day? Headlines, bread lines, blow my mind, and now this deadline, eviction or pay?
I think that's Anthony Rapp.
From?
And he's, what show, what TV show is he
in?
Oh, musical. From Rent.
Correct. Ugh. Yes, the TV show is just the hint. It is not part of any answer. 3 points.
Anthony Rapp from Star Trek: colon, Discovery.
Yes. All right, back to Sean.
Where are you going? Where are you going? Can you take me with you? For my hand is cold and need. Where are you going?
Any ideas who is singing there? Sean.
I'll take the hint.
They were in Orange is the New Black.
Oh, that's not who I thought it was.
Me neither.
There's too many women in that.
please eliminate three.
Yes.
Gonna need an answer.
Yeah. I'm stalling to think of one of their names. And the name that's coming to my head is Danielle, but I don't think that's it. So.
Is it Danielle?
Oh, wait.
The agony.
It's Crazy Eyes. It's Crazy Eyes. What's her real name?
Not Danielle. Oh, that's
you want to tell them, Tara?
So sorry,
Sarah?
I don't know if that's right, but is it Uzo Aduba?
It is.
Yes, Uzo Aduba.
What musical was that song from, though, Sean?
I know that she was in Godspell. So I'll say Godspell.
Yes.
Nice.
Correct. Got your.
I don't want to say who I thought it was because they're probably still in this game.
Yeah. Same.
Smart. All right. Sarah D. Bunting, are you ready?
Not really. Let's do it anyway.
Soon you will die and my silence will hide you. You cannot choose but to lose control. You can't control me. I live deep inside you. Each day you'll feel me devour your soul. I don't need you to survive as you need me. I'll become whole as you dance with death. And I'll rejoice as you breathe your final breath. Live inside you forever. No, Satan himself by my side.
Kelsey Grammer.
Incorrect. The show this star is from is a little show called Knight Rider.
Oh, Hasselhoff.
Correct. Any idea what that show is?
This is the moment. Jekyll and Hyde?
Yes. Yay! Correct. 2 points. Well done.
This is like a running gag at one of my jobs for like 3 years. Thanks, Hassie.
Tara.
Go, can't you go? Why is nobody listening? Goodbye, go and cry at another person's wake. If you're quick for a kick, you could pick up a christening. But please, on my knees, there's a human life at stake. Listen, everybody, I'm afraid you didn't hear it. Do you want to see a crazy lady fall apart in front of you? It isn't only Paul who could be ruining his life. You know, we both of us be losing our identities. I telephoned my analyst about it, and he said to call him Monday, but by Monday I'll be floating in the Hudson with the other garbage. I'm not well. I'm not getting married. You've been swell, but I'm not getting married. Clear the hall, because I'm not getting married. Thank you all, but I'm not getting married. And don't tell Paul, but I'm not getting married today.
Okay. Well, I know the show, but I need the hint.
All right, this person was on Mama's Family.
I thought so, and then I thought that couldn't possibly be it. Is that Vicki Lawrence? Shit.
No, that is Carol Burnett. Carol okay. Burnett, but what's the show then? You seem to know. There's two possible answers.
It's Company.
Yes. Apparently it was part of some other
Marry
thing
me
that
a little.
Could either be Putting It Together or Company.
Oh, okay. Yes. Mm.
Back to Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Life with my dad wasn't ever a picnic, more like a come as you are. When I was 5, I remember my mother dug earrings out of the car. I knew that they weren't hers, but it wasn't something you'd want to discuss. He wasn't warm. Well, not to her. Well, not to us. But everything was beautiful at the ballet.
Okay, so I did probably spend an hour listening to 20 different versions about the ballet recently, as well as watching the excellent documentary Every Little Step. So that was Kelly Bishop from A Chorus Line.
Yes, that's our second full three-pointer. Sorry, Tara.
That's okay.
Back to Sarah D. Bunting.
You're a special kind of people known as show people. You live in a world of your own. The audience paid plenty to sit there and clap, hearing you sing, watching you tap. Did you know your dentist longs to be in show business? Your window washer wants to be a...
Hint.
This actor starred in Frasier.
Kelsey Grammer? Other one? Who was in it? Okay.
Other one is correct. That was David Hyde Pierce. Any idea what that musical is?
I don't. I'll probably be mad. But I don't know what it is.
Sean, do you know it?
Isn't that In You Get Your Gun?
No? Curtains. Curtains.
Oh, curtains. Oh. That's right.
To Tara.
Yeah.
Now, this is not giving away the answer, but if I was playing this game, this is the one question that I could get right.
Okay.
I'm on my way. Completely on my own. I'm on my way. And that's all I'm certain of. I'm on my way. To a world I've never known. Away from those I love.
And I watch your lives. That's
and
Richard
the things
Kind.
You do. Sorry, did you answer what
yeah,
I was screaming?
Yeah, it's Richard Kind.
Yeah, it is Richard Kind. When I say I knew the answer, I knew that part of the answer. There's no way I knew what musical this was.
I don't either.
Is it Wise Guys or Bounce?
Bounce.
Or...
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It has like three or four different names.
Uh-huh.
Gold.
Oh.
Back to Sean. Are you ready, Sean?
Sure.
Let your mind start a journey through a strange new world. Leave all thoughts of the world you knew before.
Not quite. No. Little bitchy dog.
Okay, so I know that's Phantom of the Opera. I'm not sure who the actor is, because it's not the original. Michael Crawford. So I need a hint of the show.
Okay, the show is, and it is, Benson.
So it's the guy who played Benson? he did play it. And Benson's real name is
Uzo Aduba.
Uzo Aduba, yes. What is his real name?
What is his real name? That is the question.
Fuck.
That's not it.
No.
No, it isn't.
All right, we're going to buzz you on that one.
Yep, that's fine.
That's Robert Guillaume.
Robert Guillaume. All I could think of was French. There's a French thing.
And you've already answered, but just give us this musical again.
That was Phantom of the Opera.
Correct. All right.
I think he was the first African-American to play that role.
Really?
Sarah D. Bunting.
I remember Vince. Death
is just around the corner, waiting patiently to strike. One unplanned electrocution, that's the kind of end I can comprehend when I'm feeling uninspired or I need a little spree. I'm reborn knowing death is just around the corner coming after me.
Fuck. Few people sound as much like their speaking voice when they sing.
I know. And I think it's really hilarious that this woman's character was married to Frazier. That's Bebe Neuwirth, right? Please.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Nice.
2 points. Yes. And do you know the musical being performed there?
I don't. Fun Home. That's not it. I don't know it.
Sean, do you know?
Adam's Family.
Adam's Family. Yes.
Oh. We are all now all tied up, guys.
Nice. All right. Back to Tara.
Little girls, everywhere I turn, I can see them. Little girls, night and day, I eat, sleep, and breathe them. I'm an ordinary woman with feelings. I like a man to nibble on my ear, but I'll admit, no man has bit. So how come I'm a mother of these?
If my guess is right, she doesn't like a man to nibble on her ears. Is that Jane Lynch?
Yes.
Nice. From Annie.
From Annie, yes, correct. 3 points.
Nicely done.
All right, we'll give each of you one more question before we hit the score break. This one is for Sean.
I'll be so happy to keep his dinner warm while he goes onward and upward. Happy to keep his dinner warm till he comes wearily home from downtown. I'll be there waiting until his mind is clear while he looks through me, right through me.
All right. Any idea who is singing there, Sean?
I do have a good idea, but I'm not sure, so I'm going to be safe and take the hint.
The show that they were in is Will and Grace.
Yeah, okay. It's Megan Mullally.
Yes. And the musical?
How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
Yes. Well done. All
I
right.
I should have gone for it. Oh, well.
To Sarah D. Bunting.
Last midnight, so goodbye, all coming at you fast. Midnight, soon you'll see the sky fall. Jack, you want a bean? Have another bean. Beans are made for making you rich. Plant them and they'll soar. Here you want some more. Listen to the roar, giants by the score. Oh, you can blame another witch. It's the last midnight.
I think I know the show, but I don't know the voice. Can I have the hint, please?
This actor was in Ugly Betty.
Oh, that's what I thought.
Vanessa Williams?
Yes.
Oh, shit. Cool. So that's Wicked.
It's another one about witches.
Oh, okay. Into the Woods.
Into the Woods, yes.
Oh, okay.
All right, for Tara, taking us into our score break.
Getting pinched and pruning like them ladies at your church. Think they come at God's suggestion. Judging this one, judging that one. Boy, you got no self-divorce. Boy, I told you I was going to night school. Boy, I bet you what hateful. Now you got no grim and gospel. Sorry, you is sick and shame. Sorry, you drinking misery tea. Sorry, your life ain't what it should be. Don't see why you think it proper to take it out on me.
I have a couple of guesses, so I'll take the hint.
Grey's Anatomy.
Is that Debbie Allen? Shit.
The head doctor lady.
Yeah.
Oh, Chandra Wilson?
Chandra Wilson, please.
Chandra Wilson.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know the musical?
I do not.
I was confused for a second. I was about to tell you it has two possible answers, but it's actually just or in the title. Does that help you out?
No.
Caroline Jelly.
Or Change.
Right. Oh. Change.
All right. That will take us to the score break. Let's hear them score start.
It's a very, very close game. I am in lead with 9, barely, because Sean is right behind with 8, and Sarah D. Bunting has 7.
Guess what, Sarah D. Bunting? You are in the gross worth equalizer top. All right, I'm going to do 3 and 6 today, Sarah. 3 and 6.
Cool, cool.
Good luck.
Thanks.
90s, pop culture 2, old and dusty.
Pop culture 2.
I was going to say, that was the one you cleaned up with last week.
It's been doing well for me lately, mm-hmm. So.
Okay, here we go. 6 TV questions from pop culture 2. Who is the only character to be depicted on The Simpsons with 5 fingers on each hand?
The only character depicted on The Simpsons with 5. Oh, gosh. Monty Burns.
You were closer when you said, oh, gosh. The answer is God.
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 Oh.
TV.
There.
Again. Who spoofed her how-to image in an American Express ad by painstakingly tiling her pool with discarded credit cards?
Martha Stewart.
What did HBO hype with ads reading, every day above ground is a good one?
6 feet under?
Indeed, yes. One more. What soap enticed viewers with a 1990s storyline where Vivian Alleman impregnated herself with an embryo she stole from Kate Roberts?
Passions?
Decent guess. Days of Our Lives.
Oh, sure.
You still have 2 questions to get your answer. Who hired flamboyant interior decorator Bobby Trendy to decorate her reality show abode?
Oh, God. This is fucking tragic. Not only the fact of it, but that I know it. Anna Nicole Smith.
Yes, and we add 3 points to Sarah's title. So update the scores, please, quick.
All right. Sean has 8. I have 9. Sarah D. Bunting is now in the lead with 10.
Wow. All right. Let's get right
Thanks,
back
equalizer.
Into it.
I'll enjoy this for a moment.
That's what it's there for. All
One
right.
Moment
back
time.
To Sean. Here is your clip.
Marry the man today. Terrible though he may be, much as he likes to play, crazy and wild and free, marry the man today, rather than sigh.
Any idea who's singing there, Sean?
Yes, I, her name is Lorelai Gilmore, but not really. What's her real name?
Sean's Achilles heel is people's real names.
Yes, it is. It
it's
is.
It's really been the true equalizer in this game, I believe.
So she's singing from Guys and Dolls.
Okay, I'll give you that point.
And her name is Lauren Graham.
There we go.
Hey!
3 points.
Nice.
To Sarah D. Bunting.
When you feel sad or under a curse, your life is bad, your prospects are worse, your wife is sighing, crying, and your olive tree is dying, temples are graying and teeth are decaying, and creditors weighing your purse.
Any idea who's singing that? What TV star?
It's like just out of reach and I can't quite reach it, so I need a hint, please.
All right, this is a really good hint because even I know this trivia and I don't know anything. Alias.
Oh, Victor Garber?
Correct. In?
A funny thing happened on the way to the forum?
No, it's Godspell. Godspell
again.
Oh,
right. I mean, I knew he was in that, but...
All right, Tara Ariano. Here you go.
Welcome, bienvenue. Welcome. Fremda, étranger, stranger. Glücklich zu sehen, je suis enchanté. Happy to see you. Bleibe, rest, stay. Welcome, bienvenue. Welcome.
I actually saw him do this on Broadway. This is Alan Cumming in Cabaret.
Yes, nice. 3 points. Nicely done. We'll go back to Sean. Everybody has 3 questions left. FYI.
What a wonder is a gun. What a versatile invention. First of all, when you've a gun, everybody pays attention. When you think what must be done, think of all that it can do. Remove a scoundrel, unite a party, preserve the union, promote the sales of my book.
So that's Charles Jigoteau from Assassins. It's not the original cast, so I don't know who the actor is. So I'll need the hint.
All right. I'll give you the point for Assassins. Obviously,
thank you.
This actor starred in, I want to say, multiple seasons of American Horror Story.
That's not much help. It could literally be anyone.
Horror Story.
Sure, but Horror Story. Just one.
Right.
None of this stories business.
Sure.
Horror Story.
You want to describe him, his facial features, what he might smell like?
He's the guy who played the vampire on True Blood. What's his name?
What was his name?
Yeah, what's his name?
I think you're correct. That's Dennis O'Hare.
Yes.
Dennis O'Hare. Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. To Sarah D. Bunting.
Luck be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck, if you've ever been a lady to begin with, luck be a lady tonight. Luck, let a gentleman see how nice a dame you can be. I know the way you treated other.
Hint.
Your hint is the OC.
Oh, I can hear it now.
There's also another hint happening for you right now, but.
While you were sleeping, Peter Gallagher?
Yes, correct. What you didn't see is me raising my eyebrows up and down repeatedly during that whole segment.
Yeah, I had a feeling it wasn't Ben McKenzie. And that musical, I actually, I'm not totally sure about this, so I am going to guess that it is Damn Yankees.
No, that is Guys and Dolls.
It's the other one.
It was the other one. You're correct.
We are now all tied up again.
All tied up. Nice. All right, Tara, here is your entry.
Sex is in the heel, even if you break it. Sex is in the feel, honey, you can't fake it. Jack it up, cause I'm no flat tire. Back it up, 6 inches higher.
I think that's Billy Porter in Kinky Boots.
Yes, full 3 points there. Nicely done. All right. Here is your second to last song for Sean. Mm-hmm.
You didn't begin to dream big enough. Michael Dorsey, the man with a scheme and the master plan. Couldn't beg, buy, or borrow his dream, but now Dorothy can. Cause she's got me flying like a bird. So how to describe it? Only one word, unstoppable.
You're living in a fantasy, my friend.
There's a nice hint in that one.
I know who it is, but give me the hint anyway.
Okay. The actor is from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
So this is Tootsie, and it's... the guy who plays Greg Serrano, whose name...
Here we go!
I know! I know his name.
Imagine the poster, or the playbill, or whatever they give out at musicals.
Mm-hmm.
You're at backstage. Hello, sir! You shake his head. He introduces himself as...
Greg.
Or perhaps he drops his wallet and you open it up and you're looking at his driver's license. You're like, oh, of course, it's you. Da 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 da.
Da 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 da.
Tara Dino.
Santino Fontana.
Santino Fontana.
That is correct. All right, Sarah.
Tootsie is a terrible musical. Nobody should ever go see it.
You heard it here. All right, Sarah Dibuddy.
Yep.
How the world can change. It can change like that. Due to one little word. Married. See a palace rise. From a two-room flat. Due to one little word. Married.
Hint.
All right. You have your second performer from Alias.
Ron Rifkin?
Yeah!
I'm sorry. It was actually the Rambaldi device. That was... You're correct. It is Ron Rifkin. And what is that musical for? One more point.
One little word. Beauty and the Beast? I don't know.
Incorrect. Anybody?
Is it Fiddler on the Roof?
Cabaret, no, Tara.
Cabaret.
Yes. Okay. Oh, sure. Duh.
All right, Tara.
Yep.
Like me, I'm dying.
Hint.
That singer is also a star of 30 Rock.
Oh, Jane Krakowski.
Correct. And the musical?
I want to say Mystic Piece of the Musical, but I don't think that's correct. Something with it. Is it Waitress?
It is not. And I'm just going to say, I don't know anything. And I picked up on the context clue on this one that I think would have actually answered for me is about the train going loop to loop, right?
Oh,
that's
okay.
Starlight Express.
Starlight Express.
Oh, sure.
That was a Grossworth question. I am almost positive. And he hoped I would get it. I am very positive.
All right. Everybody has one more question. So let's get the current scores.
Still very close game. Sean and Sarah are tied with 13 points each. I have 16.
All right.
It is still impossible,
but
yeah.
First clip is for Sean.
When you see a Joe saving half of his dough, you can bet they'll be making it for some dolls. When a
another Guys and Dolls. Play the clip again.
Sure.
When you see a Joe saving half of his dough, you can bet they'll be making it for some doll. When a bomb.
Well, it's not Faith Prince.
She's a chameleon.
Yes. Because she was in an earlier revival. I need the show.
The show in question, Oz.
Who?
I'll say J.K. Simmons.
Hey.
Okay, correct. And the show.
So that's Guys and Dolls.
Guys and Dolls. All right, you have two, opening up a possible win for Sarah D. Bunting if she can get three on this question. Here we go, Sarah.
You'll be back soon, you'll see. You remember you belong to me. You'll be back, time will tell. Remember that I served you well. Oceans rise, empires fall. We have seen each other through it all. And when push comes to shove, I will send a fully armed battalion to remind you of my love. Da, 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 da.
Hint.
Your hint is looking. Although for you, there's probably a better hint, but that's not the one you get.
Would that better hint be Mindhunter? Is that Jonathan Groff? Because otherwise, I don't know.
Correct. All right. So to tie things up, what is that musical?
I don't think it ties things up, actually.
Doesn't it?
No.
I don't think so.
Oh.
Ties are with Sean.
That's what I said. Ties it up.
No, because I
have 16. With Sean, Tara's ahead of both of us.
Oh, I thought Tara was behind. I'm sorry.
Okay. Nope.
Whoops. Okay.
But that show is...
Big show, not yet mentioned on this game.
Yeah, surprising.
Showboat. I don't know. I don't know the show.
So I guess I'll use a steel meal and say it's Hamilton.
Correct.
There you go.
One more point. All right. So what is our current score then? Because I got confused. I'm sorry.
Okay. Sarah finished strong with 14. Sean and I at this current moment have 16.
Okay. So Sean has tied it up.
Yeah.
Hoping for a complete error on this question to force it.
Exactly. Yeah,
total okay. Whiff.
It might not. That's not a bad strategy, frankly. All right. Yeah. Here is your clip, Tara. You need 1 point to take it.
I'm calm. I'm calm. I'm perfectly calm. I'm utterly under control. I haven't a worry where others would hurry. I stroll. I'm calm, I'm cool, a gibbering fool is something I never become. When thunder is rumbling and others are crumbling, I hum. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. That was Tara watching the end of Loki.
Yeah, I don't know the show, and I will take the hint.
All right. The TV show in question is Perfect Strangers.
Mark Lynn Baker.
Yes, what? The 1 point she needed.
Oh, right. I was like, Nathan Lane?
Oh, wait, hang well on. Done, hang T-Bone. On, hang on, hang on. What's the show?
I don't know.
Anybody want to do Steel Meal?
No, Sean doesn't have another Steel Meal.
Oh, you only had one? Oh,
I only had one. Burn. Thanks.
Do I have any to give to people? Do I still have that? I think I do.
You have four.
I have four. Sean, do you
Why
want a Steel Meal?
Tara?
It's The Adventures of Frog and Toad, but I'm not sure if that's the name of the show. It might just be Frog and Toad.
You're going to need an answer.
Let's say Frog and Toad. Damn it.
That is a funny thing happened on the way to the forum.
Oh, I wrote down forum, but then I was like, no, he wasn't in that. But I guess he was.
Yes, he was. All right. Well, that was a squeaker.
That was really close.
Here is our tiebreaker. We'll now play for a future steel mill. As soon as anybody knows it, shout out the actor. Just the actor we're going for.
Actor.
And you will win a steel mill. Are you ready, everybody?
Yes.
Yes.
To dream. The impossible.
Frasier. Kelsey Grammer.
Kelsey Grammer, yeah.
To find the You're unbeatable welcome. Foe.
I was really hoping for an Orbach.
I was waiting for him too, and then I figured he must have been in the first game.
Yeah. Along with Stritch and Audra and all those.
And it's Christine Frasier. Baranski.
Yep.
Baranski. Yeah, no Christine Baranski either.
Value guest!
Value guest.
No?
No.
Nope.
Valued nope. Host.
Sorry, that's the wrong one. No, not me. I didn't win.
Didn't you?
Dave. What a shit show.
Play by two, Dick.
Hang on. Wait, Sarah. We're going to do this. Wait, hang on. We're going to do this. Let's do this properly. Congratulations, everybody. Everybody got a point. Well done. Excuse me, I'm just going to go over the corner and finish my stroke.
Oh my God, did someone say Macbeth in the theater? Is that what happened?
For the record, there was a Christine Baranski question that Adam really wanted in the game, but the audio was sucky, so I did not.
Gotcha.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Crate. We hike to the unescapable Schmigadoon before going around the dial with stops at American Horror Stories, Never Have I Ever, High School Musical, The Series, Love, Victor, and Dr. Death. Don and the gang at AHG Assist asked us to program local access cable shows for TV characters. And Tara explained why she is not a crackpot for calling Marvel Disney Plus shows the new webisodes of the 2020s. Sean's canon did not go up Schitt's Creek, but did go up Schitt's Creek, both at the same time.
With
because it
panel.
Sounds like shit, but a shit. It's, I don't know if you guys have noticed that. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and everybody, but mostly Tara, was a winner of this week's game time from John and Adam. Next up, it is decorating the room of your choice on Extra, Extra Hot Crate and on the next EHG Prime Sexy Beasts. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
you just lost yourself a customer,
Sarah D. Bunting.
Let me know if I should pull the fire alarm.
And Sean Pfluger.
Don't listen to Tootsie. Tootsie's terrible.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here
Surfacey.
On Extra Hot Great.
Look, I'm sorry that I overreacted to all this. I just wish all of these people would die. Is that wrong?